Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so first up, big news. We've got another speaker lined up for the Japan Real Estate Summit on the 22nd of this month. Anton Warman, who you may have seen or heard here on the podcast, former model, YouTube personality and influencer who's been buying, DIY, renovating and profiting from Akiya or abandoned / vacant homes in Tokyo, which is exactly the topic of his presentation. So you definitely don't want to miss out if you have any kind of interest in Akiya renovations and or accommodation properties, which is what he turns his houses into. He's got quite a following, both Japanese and foreigners. So now that he's in, it is quite possible the tickets, which have already been selling quite rapidly, will soon run out. So as always, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet in person, which are limited to 80, or via streaming, which are limited to 100, it's probably a good idea to pause the recording, hop over to realestate.jp to secure your spot. Okay, so for today's episode, this is a JREP session which I and Emil had to bow out of unexpectedly, but Tracy and Matt, who weren't to be deterred, have attended regardless, which is fair enough. They're really far more interesting than Emil or I. I did manage to jump in and join them towards the end of it, but until then, they've had a super fascinating conversation about Akiyas. One of Matt's past projects when he was still with Akiya and Inaka consisted of an abandoned school, of all things. So they talk about what can be done with these sorts of larger abandoned properties that aren't really homes, the treasures that can be found in them. And then they got into a more practical discussion of the challenges involved in buying and selling these abandoned homes. And there are plenty of those. Rural rejuvenation, government subsidies, and how to apply for those. A bit more about the post-pandemic recovery of the short-term stay market here in Japan, and a bit about Anton, whom I've just mentioned, and his projects. And then a more meta conversation about marketing content for real estate businesses, growing a real estate-related business in the right way and attracting the right kinds of customers, internships, digital nomads, business investment loans, all kinds of topics. And even about some particular locations, such as Lake Biwa, Shiga and Shimane prefectures, prices, potential land plots for various projects in these areas, and much, much more. So a bit of an eclectic conversation on a whole bunch of topics, but very interesting and entertaining, I think. Enjoy the chat, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Here we go. Hey, Matt. It's good to talk to you. It's been a little while, actually.
It sure has been, like, since the JREP event.
It's been a minute, hasn't it? Well, I mean, that was, oh my goodness, that was at the end of last year. So, yeah. So
wait, was that December or was that January? When was that?
Oh, no, sorry, that was February. Yes, you're right. It was February. We were originally going to do it in October, weren't we? But no, it's February.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Congratulations once again for pulling off an astounding.
Wonderful. And you, that was a pretty epic day.
Yeah.
And where are you based now? Are you in?
So that's a complicated answer.
Yeah.
So our main office is in, it got even more complicated recently. So our main office where I am right now is in Omote Sando in Harajuku / Shibuya.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an apartment in Ikebukuro,
mm-hmm.
But I also have a place down in Yugawara.
Right.
Which is near Atami. And then we also just started, in fact, my business partner, Parker, my business partner is out there right now. So there's an abandoned middle school in Ogawamachi, Saitama.
Mm-hmm.
And so we managed to latch on to the library and the hososhitsu, like the broadcast room of this abandoned school, and are currently converting it into a satellite office for Akiya and Inaga.
Wow. Okay. So it's all happening.
Yeah. Well, so the library is our satellite office. Interestingly enough, this is a very good story for the magic that awaits you with abandoned property. Is if you just think outside of the box a little bit, sky's the limit. And so it's a school. It's full of what, like gymnasium and then a bunch of classrooms, which obviously can just become office space.
Mm-hmm.
But they had this damn broadcast room and they had no idea what to do with it. And of course, I go in there and I'm a musician and I just look at like, guys, this is a soundproofed booth. Like, we can just get some mics and amps in here, and then it's a sound studio. Like, can we rent that? And so then we got that.
Yeah. So, well, can you rent that on like Space Market or Spacey or one of those things, right?
I don't. So it's interesting. So Ogawa is being pretty progressive in that the school that we're renting, right? We don't own it. Was abandoned for, I believe it was 11 years. Yeah, and then it's a big one. And so last year the Ogawa municipal government was kind of uncharacteristically gung-ho, let's say, adventurous, and they said, "Hey, what the hell? Like, that's, we can make that into office space, right? What if we just like front load a few million dollars and like renovate it and see what happens?" Of course, we were kind of not part of those talks, but we were privy to this as it was happening. And, you know, we were kind of watching it and then eventually it got to the point where like, okay, like we're doing it. And then after they did that, it got to the point where they're like, all right, we're opening it up for like rental space. And we're like, yes, now give it to us, please. So yeah, that's been, and it's a big renovation. Like, we had to replace all the carpet. God, what have we done? We went to a few Akiya with the agents, the local agents. Because one thing that we're also starting to work on is basically reclaiming furniture from Akiya and using that for retrofitting like desks or cupboards or like basics, not necessarily like antiques or anything. But so we went into, actually with a national TV crew. We went into a few Akiya in Ogawamachi and managed to get a few items. Wasn't that successful of a, if I'm being honest, I was expecting a little more, but yeah, so we've got like abandoned furniture and stuff now. And actually there was the science lab shelving we got.
Oh, that's epic, that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But have you seen a guy who goes around, photographing snapshots of like Akiya? It's like people have just stood up from their kitchen table and left, but 20 years have gone by.
Yeah.
There's some pretty good photo journalism that's done.
I'm glad you say that. I personally find it, I mean, just beyond words interesting, and like the potential for storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, straight up, like, wow, somebody did legitimately just like walk up and like, what happened?
Yeah.
What if you're like, you know, like a detective, like, okay, wow, I found a photo album and here's their life. And mm-hmm. I guess they're married and had or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like a wacky idea we had, like, so we find basically like, you know, record collections, right? Usually CDs, tapes, mini discs, and stuff. We haven't moved on this yet, but one idea we had is like, what if we just made like Spotify Akiya mixtapes?
No.
Like we find the actual abandoned CDs of like Hikaru, whatever her name is.
Yeah.
Or like just whatever artists, and then locate them on Spotify or whatever, YouTube, whatever platform, and then just like recreate what this house sounded like.
Oh, music. That's really cool. That's actually really cool. that's almost like a reality show or like
kind of, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the one that you're talking about is maybe Abandoned Kansai.
No, that's a guy. I think it's called Tokyo Diaries or something. Tokyo something. It's on Twitter. I'll find it and maybe it'll go in the show notes. But it's actually really, it's just fascinating to see these snapshots of abandoned life here. But I did see a news article, and I wondered if you'd seen it as well, as Kyoto is going to, they've actually passed a bill to increase the taxes on Akiya, people who own Akiya. So hopefully that's to motivate people to either renovate or sell or just not leave them as Akiya anymore. So that's within Kyoto. Do you think other cities will do that?
I hope not. I think it's a terrible idea. No, I mean, so the problem is not that Akiya owners they want to sell, right? The problem is that accepted practice of real estate business on the agency side, not geared towards efficiently and profitably selling Akiya. So in my opinion, all that Kyoto is doing is introducing more pain points to owners who already want to sell. They don't need motivation to want to sell more. They have it.
Right.
Without alleviating the hurdles that are still in place for them to actually sell.
Well, I mean, the Akiyas in my area are owned by real estate agents, right? So they're just holding them. They're just like, you know, right. I'm guessing they're holding because these are ones that can't be rebuilt because there's no access, and they're holding them for something else to happen, and then they're going to take the capital gain on the land if and when the land becomes usable. So
I would imagine that there will be a positive effect on the corporations forcing them to, but so far as like the people that it really matters to, which is to say, like the individuals, the families, who are in possession of these assets that they don't want and are vocal about not wanting, but nobody will take them because the system doesn't allow them to divest themselves of it. I expect there to be a relatively negative negative effect from what Kyoto has proposed. And I've heard a few. I think there was maybe a spot in Kanagawa as well that was talking about. But I mean, I think the Kyoto thing I read today passed like today.
Yes, it just went today, through today.
Yeah, and it'll be implemented in 2026, I think.
2026, yeah. So it'll take a little while. Sorry, I'm just going to change the subject completely again. Have you ever looked into any of the subsidies or like rural revitalization money that certain cities like Chiba or other places have that they've implemented?
We're aware of it, and I mean we've never like pursued it. It's too bureaucratic. There's too much red tape. Like often enough, whatever rewards, well, maybe that's not the right word, but whatever like gain you can get from it is, there's a whole lot of work involved pulling your hair out. And it's just like, if you can do a cash buy, like go that route.
But it was more on like a business development. So basically this is a shout out to anyone who loves paperwork, who loves bureaucracy. This is a business opportunity for you to really dig into the money that the governments are offering and actually doing a matching service and fill in, you do all the forms and then you get paid a percentage of the success.
That would be interesting.
That would be good for someone who's like, you know, creators need money and hate paperwork. And then there's a lot of people who are really good on the paperwork, but are very risk averse. So it's sort of just putting those two together.
The matching. That's an interesting. I mean, I might talk to our legal services, but that's a good idea. It's really like a lot of, and I think Blanca has said this before, all real estate or not, like a lot of the issues that can be, that are run into in, I guess, like what business in Japan, especially with like more traditional or more maybe domestic versions of whatever industry. Yeah, you can do it, but like it's a lot better if you just have that person who specializes in facilitating the transaction.
Exactly.
Does it cost more? Yeah. Guess what? You already finished the job. Like it's done and it was done well. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, no, I'm a massive fan of like, because I get a lot of people. So at the moment, I have just been running ragged because the borders are open. Everyone's, you know, wanting to come. Everyone's wanting to buy. Everyone's wanting to create minpaku. And I'm getting a lot of people who want to hire me to get all their minpaku and everything ready. And it's like, well, you know what? I don't do the paperwork. Right. I don't do this bureaucracy. First of all, it's not in my native language. I'm not good at it. And there are, you know, shiho shoshi who are who love this stuff.
And that's what, like, we have a team of like 40.
Yeah, and what I do is I do an introduction, and it's like, okay, well, I'll do the project management, right? You need this person to do the renovation. You need this person to do the safety certificate. You need this person to do the paperwork, and I will be your point person 100%, but I will not, I cannot do the paper. Well, if you want me to do it, it's just
sign a waiver so that if I screw something up, I'm not held liable.
and there's a bunch of really talented shiho shoshi, and they love doing this paperwork stuff. And you know, they go to the ward offices and they do it all. And it's like, yeah, you've got to pay them for their work, but I think it's you just need to, you know, when you're coming here and you're going to do a business, you're going to do a minpaku, or you're going to do one of, you know, a business like, you know, the clients that you help, that just should be a line item on your you know, on your budget, because it's the best money I ever spent.
Yeah, like you said, that's yet another matchmaking kind of thing. Like for what you, and which, now that you're talking, or we're talking about it, reminds me of kind of a problem that I at least have developed recently with what I more or less refer to as like the shokunin mindset, of like shokunin, what is that, like artisan,
right?
And which more or less amounts to massive talent, zero marketing or business development. And so you've got all these shiho shoshi in this example being like, hey, yeah, we can do, or actually they're not doing any of this. Yeah. They're just kind of saying to them like, yeah, we are very talented. Where's
our customers? Yeah, exactly.
They're just kind of waiting for it to happen. Whereas, I mean, having that matchmaking service, I think, is like, in that sense, there's a massively underutilized, however, extremely talented pool across probably all industries in Japan. They're just kind of just waiting for, you know, somebody to make an introduction, or I don't know, a YouTube video, or possibly mention them on our podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm also going to give a shout out, because a lot of the people that I work with, that I choose to work with, are independent contractors, and they're usually women, and they're usually working from home, and because they've got various childcare responsibilities, and there is so much talent. And honestly, I have to sort of convince some of these women that they're charging too little, that they're really undervaluing what they're bringing to the table. And so, you know, that's just, you know, part of my philosophy as a, you know, card carrying, you know, a feminist, but there is just so much talent. And you know, the work gets done. It is done like meticulously and at a really low cost. So there's a whole bunch of talented women. You know, they may not be, like you said, they're not singing and dancing, and they're not saying pick me, but you know, I've got a ton in my Rolodex. So if you're looking for various talented inner professionals, reach out, and I'll sorry.
I sure will when the opportunity presents itself.
So, yeah.
That's part of the shokunin mindset, which also, as I'm wont to do, reminds me of my experience in music as well. It was only until like 2016 or 2015 that I could start paying out bands like their cut of the door. I'd have the cut in my hand.
Yeah.
and being like, hey, you gotta, like, here it is, that's yours, like, you were on stage, like, doing your thing, you're, this is your percent. They're like, well, no, we do the merch, you take the door, like, we don't want that. And it's like, whoa, you're undervaluing yourself, like, yep. Mm-hmm. It's not free money, but, like, geez, you know, like, mm-hmm. you can take more, don't be greedy, but, you know, you're worth more than that.
Yeah, but traditionally, right, in Japan, for the music industry, it's pay to play almost. Like, you know, you pay, or you get, you know, you bring a certain number of people to the door. Like, you do your own marketing to be able to play in public. So
right, but I mean, going back to the contract, the independent contractors that you were talking about, how they were only charging so much, and you kind of have to say, well, yeah, that's fine, but, you know, you could do this and still be able to get it.
But, you know, educated, professional, professional women who just get the job, like, who just get the job done, accountants like Shiho Shoshi and people that put together companies, set them up. It's just, there's a lot of that paralegal work, just does my head in. And
It's funny. Yeah, I could talk about that forever. How's things going on your end? I mean, the borders are open, like, pretty damn.
Borders are open. I am actively adding, in the last month I've added 5 new properties to my portfolio. These are not ones that I've sort of, I don't do a rental. I'm actively looking for some rental arbitrage deals. So these are ones where I'll do the chintai and I'll pay all the money up front and then guarantee the monthly rent. But they're like hen's teeth. They're so hard to find. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of maxed out on my borrowing capacity, so I can't buy anything right now. But the properties that I'm taking on are people that are moving overseas. They've got the properties and they're wanting to use their own place. So they're either second houses or and I'm also working with other minpaku hosts who want to have more of a, so they're currently on Airbnb, but, you know, they need a bit of help. Coming onto my website means that they've got a whole bunch of more marketing. You know, I've got my email list, I nurture a couple of thousand people every month, people that are actively looking at coming. So that's a way of doing some co-marketing. And that's easy for me. So the co-marketing is super easy. I do prefer the co-hosting because then I get to meet the guests, and that's really what I love doing, is setting up the hospitality. We've added a whole bunch of new places. It's great. It's great. And then on my consulting side, I've got a number of clients who are, they're putting together their own. So they've got one client, they've bought a big old property in Chiba that they're going to turn into a ryokan. So,
is it already like an existing ryokan that just needs some?
It's going to be a ryokan and a gym.
Combination.
It's going to be good. I'm sort of working out, you know, marketing strategies and pricing strategies and that type of thing. So I really like getting my hands into that. And when you have someone else's money, it's lovely as well. So
yeah, it's just free fun.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. It's like having a dollhouse, but like a big size. So
yeah, like an actual house.
Yeah. And Blanca's not here because Blanca is just like run off her feet as well. I mean, she's just, you know, there's so many properties being renovated right now, which is good.
Yeah, no, the market's really opened up like a lot so far. And I feel like there's a lot more like bravery or like, I don't know, appetite for.
Yeah, appetite. It's an appetite, I think. Yeah. Now that the uncertainty around closing borders and people can move in and out freely, and just yesterday there is no more restrictions at the, like, completely gone. And I think that just gives people a bit more confidence. We had it before. I had it this time last year, but takes a while to trickle down. So
yeah, true.
What about you? You run off your feet as well?
Yeah, well, I mean, that New York Times thing came out. So like that really, we've fielded, I don't know how many hundreds of
Real inquiries, serious inquiries.
It's pretty good. We're moving really quickly on what, 5 properties, right? In Chiba, Saitama, and Shizuoka.
Yeah. Right now. Kominkas or
so one of them, yeah, out in Chiba. And yeah. Then the other ones are various states of like regular-ish houses.
Showa era, you know.
No, like one in Saitama was built in 2010. It's that's a repossession issue though. The person way overextended themselves, the owner. And so the bank said, gonna grab that one from you.
Yeah.
So that's back out on the market now.
And there's been a ton of actually renovation people as well. So there's a lot more YouTubers who are renovating properties.
There's what's his name? The Scandinavian guy?
Yeah, Anton. He's finished his property. I went and saw it recently. It looks amazing. And he's got his little hotel license going. And he's also his original YouTube channel was all in Japanese, which I thought was fantastic. And he was reaching a different sort of market because, you know, that's a rare niche. But now he's done it. He started an English channel as well. So, and it's gone berserk. I think he's at like 500,000 subscribers in like 2 months.
A picture of like Silver Button YouTube, something or other, which I don't know. We're at 2,000 followers.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a full-time job. Those guys, they really know what they're doing. They've got, you know, professional editors and, you know, it's all about the thumbnail, right? It's all about the algorithm and getting those keywords. These digital natives, these millennials, I don't get it. So you're a millennial?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a hippie millennial, aren't you?
Yeah, right. I'm one of the good ones.
No,
I was talking about. I literally have I have terabytes and terabytes of footage from basically like I documented all of our work with Aki as well as the music stuff over the course of the last 3 years, and just have zero capacity to address editing any of.
You need an intern. That's what you need, an intern.
We got interns.
I've actually got my first intern coming next month because, you know, the borders have been closed for 3 years. And now everyone wants to come back and there's some intern, matching companies. And there's one that like I'll report back on how it's gone, but this is a very eager chap. He knows a little bit about real estate. He's, you know, he's looking for university credit from the US. I think he's from Texas somewhere or other. Mm-hmm. And
the handshake that you went through.
Sorry.
Did you go through an app called Handshake?
No, it was just someone contacted me and then I did some, you know, I did some background checks and, I've also spoken to the intern and I said, because I'm not paying anything. I'm not even paying for like visas or airfares or accommodation. All I have to do is provide a place of business, which I have, you know, internet. They provide their own like laptops and a job description. So, and a report every month, but they're taking care of like all of the pastoral care stuff. So the making sure that they've got visas and a place to live and also some weekend get togethers with the other intern. So it's, and I'm, you know, that I'm sure the parents of these kids are footing the bill. I've got a chap who seems to be, you know, interested at least in the type of business that I run, that I've got a couple of, I'm trying to get some really interesting projects. You know, I don't, you know, I, you know, I cleaning the office or, you know, archiving old stuff, that's boring, right? So I wanted to give something that was useful, that's juicy, that he can use in his, resume and that is also of value to me. So I'm just trying to think of that. So he's going to run through all of my standard operating procedures so that it's so like making sure that the onboarding process for staff as well as for guests are going to, it's all, I've redone all of my standard operating procedures. So he gets to check through those as if he's a new person to see if they're valid. And also I'm going to get him to do some walkthroughs, some video walkthroughs and some, and to use for social media. So that'll keep him busy for about a month.
Awesome. That's good. Yeah. By the way, I sent over a link. So Handshake is this, I've used it. It's kind of wild that I don't know anybody in Japan using it. It's where like all, like at least US college students looking for internships. Like it's the internship, it's what, internship LinkedIn, I guess.
Oh, okay. And this is like in person or these are virtual?
It can be either. I've had interns both for real estate stuff as well as for music stuff. It seems to be quite the untapped resource. I myself have, for whatever reason, not been using it very recently. But now that we're talking about interns, well, I mean, we already have what, three and a fourth one coming in. So
all right, so in an in-person intern, so but that's a private, you've organized that privately or you've gone through an agency?
None of it's agent. We can actually get hit relatively frequently with internship requests from universities, as well as just kind of business connections, you know, like a former clients, cousins, you know, grandson or whatever. Connection of a connection of a connection sort of thing. Handshake. And I mean, honestly speaking, if you go into the minds of like American college students and say, hey, I've got a wacky internship that you can do in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of pretty quick. So yeah, if you check that out if you ever have the time or the curiosity.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'll have a look at it because I actually got another job, which is which I need done, but for my software company. So,
I've gotten people from CMU to work on stuff as well. So
CMU, what's that?
Sorry, Carnegie Mellon University. It's a relatively
high. All right, yeah, I've heard of that. Mm-hmm.
IT community.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's good.
Okay. Well, I shall check it out. So my intern starts. He's coming for 3 weeks in June. Okay. But I just, you know, as a when I was a student, that would have been amazing to go to another country and do a job in a company. I mean, this is a very small business, so it's not like going to work for a big formal Japanese company. But then he doesn't have the language to worry about. So.
That was one of the interesting things, actually, kind of tangentially related, that I heard of recently about how the Japanese government is somehow looking to capitalize on encouraging digital nomads in Japan. And I'm kind of lukewarm on it. And the reason for that is, well, do you know what a digital nomad? Like, they're tourists. They're not working for a Japanese company. They haven't started a Japanese company. They're not paying taxes. They're not buying land. They're not really contributing to anything except for maybe a few tourist dollars.
Oh, well, I've had a number. I had a number of digital nomads who were sort of, you know, covering my costs over the pandemic. So I'm very grateful to them for that.
I'm not against the idea of digital nomading, but from like the government's point of view.
Oh yeah, they're buying stuff, aren't they? They're buying things that they're
exactly
the tax, so they're making the sales tax dollars. I don't know,
yeah, which isn't bad, but like if basically my thought was if I was the government, which of course I'm not and never will be, encourage them to encourage the digital nomad stuff. That's step one, get them hooked. Step two is to facilitate them starting IT companies in Japan.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah. So then, like then, you know, industry grows, but you know, that's just.
Well, there is that grant, that Tokyo Toll grant. It's the Tokyo Toll. There is a, sorry, it's not a grant, it's a loan. And it's specifically for foreigners who want in Tokyo, who want to borrow up to, I think it's up to a couple of $100,000 worth, and there's no guarantor required and no collateral. And then the interest is, the interest rate's at about 2.7% or 3%. And yeah, and you basically it's done on the strength of a business plan. So it's a loan and you've got to pay it back, of course, but it's for businesses that are under 5 years old, so incorporated like either Goro Geishas or Kabushi Geishas. Yeah, so if you, you know, need some startup capital, and this is a good way of getting at a, you know, 2%, which compared to a Jutaku loan is like, it's like hell expensive, but compared to the cost of other money from overseas, it's actually a good deal. And also you don't have to give it any, you don't have to give any stake in your company away, right?
See, like that there
VC is, company.
Yeah, this the equity thing is really we've had a few organizations approach us and just like, of course the money numbers up front, we're like, all right, but like what are you, what's your take? It's like, well, you know, 20%. What? No.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
But the right partner who is also wanting to grow the business and bring some smarts in, right? Bring in their Rolodex and open some doors that you may not be able to open yourself. That certainly would be interesting. But, you know, you've already, you know, I don't think you need that, do you?
Honestly, no. I mean, sure, like more support would be nice. Like we're kind of at capacity right now, but
yeah.
I mean, we're not, what's the right way to say it? You know, this is absolutely a passion project. Like we're running it. We don't make that like, I mean, yeah, we're operating in the black, like any business should. Mm-hmm. But this isn't like a let's get rich off of abandoned properties sort of thing. Like it's about like doing it correctly, making sure the I's and the T's are dotted and crossed. Also, like I personally and professionally have more or less developed an allergy to like what I refer to as cancerous growth. Like I want to grow properly. I want to grow ethically. I want to mm-hmm. grow comfortably. I want to grow more or less with the times, like, you know, push boundaries and things like that, absolutely. But I don't want to just like go from A to Z and whoa, where, what happened? And, you know, the whole move fast and break stuff, like,
Yeah, but also, you know, getting paid is not, is pretty nice too. So like there's no reason why you shouldn't do all of those things and get paid. There is no, like, you know, it's not like a, you know, two things can be true at once. You can get paid and be a good person. It doesn't mean that you have to be an asshole like all the profiteers, you know, those guys that are making a squadillion dollars, they're all assholes. You know, that's a.
So we've, one interesting finding was, and we're still navigating this, but the general trajectory is like we keep increasing our prices. I remember when we first started, we had a few phone calls with an Australian person, and they had, I forget exactly what their story, but anyway, they had invested, they had assets in Australia, and more of us had used, there was a similar service as to ours. I mean, more of us buyers rep, right? Mm-hmm. And I think they said that they paid them, it was like 14K. Like it was a very, like orders of magnitude above our, what we were getting paid at that point, mm-hmm. kind of price. And they were encouraged. They were like, yo, you're way too low. Like you need to raise those prices right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of chewed on that for a little bit. And then at some point we're like, okay, let's raise it a little bit. And then, so we're on, I think the third, what do you call it? Like we've raised prices three or mm-hmm. so times, which is actually great because it helps filter out tire kickers.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And as much as I enjoy, you know, chewing the fat about like the wonders of rural Japan and mm-hmm. stuff, like, you know, like buy me a beer or something, like whatever, but like this is a business, like,
yeah,
and, exactly. it's good business. Like what all of us in JREP do is like good business. It's not just making money. It's like, okay, yeah, make money, but make good things happen. Support, you know, communities, support industry, mm-hmm. support people. You know, like if that's not what, if you're looking for just like a fairy tale, I don't know, go watch YouTube or something. Like, not to sound a little bit harsh, but yeah being able to filter out the tire kickers. And I mean, often enough, I still don't know how to deal with this. There are so many stories about, you know, super cheap. Like recently we had a vet, an Aussie vet who was in some way or another, like a disabled vet, contact us having heard.
Like army veteran rather than military veteran, not military, like an animal veteran.
Oh, like no. Military vet.
Right.
Who had been somehow, you know, disabled in the line of service. And I think in his mid-60s, kind of down and out and whatnot, and had heard about, you know, super cheap houses in Japan. And they contacted us. And I mean, of course, I responded. I forget exactly what I said. And, you know, I wasn't like, get out of here. But I mean, I kind of had to explain, like, I somehow said it very softly. But it's problematic that these narratives exist about the cheap stuff because it really bolsters a lot of hope where there ought not be.
Exactly. It's clickbait. I said that exactly to a client this week. They were coming in with their eyes open anyway. So, because they were all about the numbers, and I said, you know, okay, well, the numbers are great, but don't let the clickbait of like super cheap, because it'll be a money pit. To change the subject a little bit, I've just come back from a holiday because it's just been Golden Week here, in Lake Biwa, Shigakin, mm-hmm. and I've never been down that way before.
I love it.
And I was really surprised at how buoyant the housing seemed to be. Like there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of beautifully, you know, maintained places. And then there was a whole bunch of new builds going in. And this was fairly rural. So,
Shiga's very interesting. Interestingly,
Shiga.
So I actually studied abroad in Hikone on Lake
Biwa. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm relatively familiar with the area. And you said you were in Otsu.
No, we were. Well, that was when I wrote to you. I was in Otsu, but we were staying a bit further up, and we did go to Hikone.
Oh, okay.
So we went. We ended up over 4 days. We had a car. We ended up, you know, we planned it out, but we ended up over the 4 days circumnavigating the whole thing. And I didn't realize just how massive this lake is. I just thought it was like, you know, a lake, right? But this is just enormous.
It's the largest in Japan, I believe.
I'm not surprised. It take, you know, it's like it's the size of a whole, you know, US state almost. It's massive. Yeah,
it's huge. Yeah.
But the all the way around, it was really interesting. There were people that were obviously taking advantage of being close to, you know, close to water sports and or being very close to, you know, historic, really historical things. Like that a castle in Hikone is just magnificent. It's really good. I really enjoyed that day out.
So that's actually a spot that I've had my eye on for a while because infrastructure wise, it's very well situated. I mean, it's right between Kyoto and Nagoya on the Shinkansen, and it's a beach, and it's a natural lake.
It's a natural lake. And it seems to, you know, it seems to be very popular with, you know, people who really like nature and outdoors. It's like, every second person was camping or riding, you know, riding a bike. We had bikes for one day. And,
I remember doing that. I did that in Hikone a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so, why there's not more of them in Japan, I don't know, because as a bike rider, it's like there is like a full, safe, off-the-road bike path, which is just, and it's along, you know, you follow the water line, and it's just fantastic. We there were animals and ducks, and you know, so it was a whole family affair with my son and my sister-in-law. So yeah, we had a ball.
Yeah, a great area. One of my good friends, Jessup,
I know Jessup.
Yeah so when he, you know, his bass thing, right? He's got the fishing tours that he's doing. I think like when he was first building that up, he and I went down to Lake Biwa and did some high speed bass fishing.
High speed bass fishing.
Yeah, and we were in a speedboat, like a 120 kilometer.
What are the prices like? You know, I guess to bring it back to real estate, what are the prices like down there? I mean, because I know Tokyo prices really well, but these seem like new builds. So I'm guessing the cost of building a house is like would be the same in slightly rural areas it is in Tokyo, but the land price, what's the difference in land price?
It's cheaper for sure. Especially, well, that's the thing that's weird about Shiga is I think it's a really excellent location. For whatever reason, has just been kind of like, I mean, people just pass through Shiga. Like, it's not really, like, I guess maybe Hikone is a destination, but like, have you ever heard anybody like singing the praises of Shiga?
But no, that's the thing. That's why I haven't been there in 22 years. And it's like, this, but it seems to be where a lot of people have, like, especially people in Kansai would have their second like holiday house, for example, on the lake.
Let me take a look real quick at what land prices are like.
And here's Ziv. Ziv's been in a meeting, so he's going
to come in. Johnny!
There he is!
Johnny! What is happening with your curtain?
What curtain? What are you on about? There's no curtain here.
It's not a curtain.
You're looking very.
This is our. We're recording, aren't we? That's okay. This is our man cave that a couple of buddies and me are renting from a customer. See all the board games and the poker chips and the TV and the projectors. This is our man cave. We do occasionally get some ladies, but it's essentially a man cave.
Very nice. And you're looking very fit and tanned after your holiday.
Why, thank you.
Yes.
I'm not very appropriate professionally, but that's okay. What have you been ranting about?
We have been talking so many things. We've been talking interns, and we've been talking about like outsourcing, you know, outsourcing some of the jobs of like, you know, the scrivener work, and how an accountancy when you're running a business here, and also talking Akias and taxes and all sorts of things. So
Nice. We're just starting to outsource bookkeeping as we speak, after two hired and fired bookkeepers that it takes about 3 months each to train. We had it.
Yeah, well, I was actually just singing the praises of you know, freelance women who work from home, and they get the job done, and there's just so much talent at home. So
I don't know just how much information this will give you, but looking at Shiga Prefecture, the entirety of it, at land prices, not at property, like buildings.
Yeah.
So just land. I had to cut things down because I can only get 500 responses at a time, which is a ridiculous limitation. But anyway, so I started at a minimum of 15 million yen, going up to a maximum of 500 meters squared for the plot.
500 meters squared for the land. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're so buying this for what, Matt?
No, so I was wanting to know prices around Shiga.
Okay.
And so I get 411 hits for that. So there's a lot of land available. And the most expensive is what? 7.08 oku. And
7 oku for how much land?
Is that like a golf course or something?
I was going to say, put a shopping center there.
What the fuck is this?
There are some, Matt, we have received complaints about your potty mouth. You got to watch that. We have seen some sellers that are just leaving, not even in pre-bubble days, just like, I have no idea, who are thinking that they can actually sell their land for these kinds of amounts.
That might be it, because this, I'm seeing like 278 meters squared for 6.28 oku.
Oku, okay, that's a bit nutty. But I was
good
just
luck
saying,
with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was.
Is it flash land? I might have a solar farm guy who might be interested.
Oh.
Like commercial, so like big solar farm guy.
This one's in.
But no, 200 square. What can you do with that? That's nothing.
Am I what, 6,280 mon? So that's, I still can't do mon conversion.
No, that's half. That's about half.
That's half that. That's 60. That's 60 million. That's
62 million. There we go. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so that makes a bit more sense, but still, yeah. For Shiga, it's not.
No, I was just impressed at how vibrant this rural area was. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of things going on. It was just really interesting. Seemed to be a lot of like Kansai people with second houses and a lot of people who are camping and riding bikes and being very healthy and yeah. And tell me about Shimane, Ziv.
Shimane?
Shimane area. What's the infrastructure like in Shimane?
The name sounds familiar. I think we looked at properties there, but have we actually bought anything there? Did
no,
I say
I
that?
Don't know. No, my friend is looking at a property there with you.
Okay.
So
one of your clients is looking in Shimane.
Yeah, so that, but I mean, I guess it's fairly, it's got a nice run through to Fukuoka, right?
Is that Kitakyushu Prefecture or Fukuoka Prefecture? Oh, no, sorry, Kitakyushu is Fukuoka Prefecture.
Yeah, it's not Kyushu. It's still on Honshu.
Okay, so Hiroshima way?
No, on the other side, the Sea of Japan side.
Oh.
Which I haven't really explored at all.
Sea of Japan?
But, you know, it's a sort of, you might be able to get something really cheap.
Oh,
but,
yeah, just after Hiroshima. Yeah, north of Hiroshima. I have no idea, to be honest with you. I haven't seen. It looks beautiful in the photos I'm looking at.
Do you know much about that area, Matt?
No, not at all.
I know somebody. Yeah, I know some. I mean, I've met somebody from there.
No, but I mean, if you have a second house there, I mean, what's, you know, it, as a, you know, as a non-Japanese person, is you know, buying an Akio or buying a, you know, a, like a cheap house there, what's your quality of life going to be? You know,
well, I'm going to say the infrastructure is looks to be lacking at best. So that's going to be right there. Like,
as soon as I see the word sparsely populated, I know the infrastructures are going to suck.
I mean, it looks like there's like two train lines in the entire prefecture. So,
so you need a car.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, there's what Izumo and Matsue cities, but I don't really know anything about them. So
no.
I'm going to say Shimane is probably, I'm sure I'd probably enjoy it, but I want to say it's relatively kind of challenging.
Yeah, you'd have to be like Heidi on the mountainside, right?
Yeah, wow. Just like looking at the satellite view of it is, it's just, it's like Iwate. I don't know which is worse.
So from Matsue to Hiroshima, which I'm guessing is the nearest big city, right? Would be three hours and a half by train. Jesus. Wow. Oh, no, you got to go to Okayama first. That's the nearest big-ish city.
Because there's no, you know, like, there's no train that goes up that side.
And even that is 3.5 hours, nah.
Yeah, at least on official listings for buildings in Shima, across the prefecture, there's only 145 registered ones.
Buildings, you mean as like Itobita, like an apartment building, or?
What did I search for? Yeah, Itoken. So let me look, let me add the.
It's actually more than I would have thought for that area.
If I add other, I get an additional 24. So I want to say Shibane. Basically, I'm sure there's many, many more than that. But I want to say just resources and people power is just lacking. And so, like, I bet if you go to a local municipality or a local agent, like, they'll open up a file, like a file or a drawer, and like have a bunch of chidashi for things. But so far as digitization is concerned, it's under 200. So far as property land that has a standing structure on it, Akiya or not. Or wait, I'm sorry, those are all Akiya. Wait, are they?
Okay.
Anyway, not much.
Okay. No, just interested in hearing your thoughts, because I don't know anything about that part of town. About that part.
Somebody emailed me today to ask me, how is the process of purchasing an Akiya different from purchasing a normal property? I'm like, wow, how many hours have you got?
Let me tell you.
Is that worth a blog post or a YouTube video? Like, please check this out.
Well, I mean, this is what Matt does. I think he's got a few of those, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really confusing. It's all confusing, but with normal property, it's just like comparatively more streamlined. I mean, there is a big, I wouldn't call it pride, but like, I don't know. People like to think that they're really good at repairing things that they've never tried repairing before. So they just go it themselves and then realize like, I don't know how to do this. And then
we get a lot of requests recently. They don't involve research as such, which is why I don't send them to you, because otherwise they'd all go to you. But people just come to us with a listing that they've already found on some Akiya Bank website or what have you. And I want that.
Okay. Yeah. So we deal with that, but we charge them the same for whether or not we do the research, because basically, like, we're the professionals. You're not. You want us to check that out? All right. It's probably junk, but you seem to be sold on it. So pay us what you would pay us to do the real good research, and we'll go do it.
Mm.
And then we'll come back and probably say, yeah, guess what? It was junk.
Yeah.
They're actually really happy with, I won't say exactly where, but out in, I'll say out east. there was a client where we're basically at the end of the process. And we found something, basically found like a pretty, I'd call it, you know, 96th percentile kind of match with what they requested and what we actually found. And it's, I'm sure both of you like know this, but it's just always the best when you get there and like they're looking at it and like, you know, and they've already paid. So like they know what's up, like they're invested in the process and the search and they understand everything. And like, and they got there before us for the visitation and they're already kind of walking around and stuff. And just like this huge smile on their face. And I'm like, ah, wait, is that good? Or like, I need to look first. Like, I don't want you smiling before I know. Like, I need to open up that kitchen floor and climb under to go look at all of the, whatchamacallits, the foundation and whatnot. Like, stop smiling. not yet, too early. But no, we confirmed it. So like fingers crossed, we've already had the building. And so by our inspection, all good. Of course, we're not officials. So we have our, Ikkyu Kenchikuka come in, who's a licensed inspector. Is that the title?
Yep. Building inspector. Yep.
Right. As well as land too. They've already conducted it. The building itself came back flying colors. We're just waiting on the results of the land, but he doesn't really expect anything bad from it. And so just like, I mean, boy, it's always such a good feeling. Just, I don't know where I'm going with this. I just kind of want to beam about like,
if the building is not tilting, then it's probably a good indication that the land is not suffering from liquefaction as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
What are they paying? Like, what's?
Well, we're gonna. can I tell you later?
Sure.
It's not a huge price, but yeah, it's something.
Good. But, okay, yeah, it's not like a $1 house. So it is like it has some.
No, and I mean, like, especially with the New York Times thing, we've had a lot of international interest. And I mean, basically, what we are now saying is like, look, if you're going to do this and you're going to do it right, you have to do one of two things. Number one, you need to incorporate here in order to manage your asset. You can buy it legally and whatnot from abroad, but if you don't have management, then it's just going to keep rotting or start rotting, right? So either you incorporate and we can help you do that, or two, you hire a proxy. Which again can be us or Tracy. I'm sure that you also do this kind of stuff. Like basically get somebody else to manage it for you who has and stuff. And at this point, we basically just say, like, look, if you don't have probably about 140K liquid, kind of a non-starter. Like you need the incorporation process, you need to have that 5 million yen in cash. If you go through us for the incorporation services, that's an additional 3.6 mil over the course of 6 months, so 600K per month. And then there's the actual investment in the property itself.
Yes, and then there's the actual property, right? So.
Right. And what we find right now is usually starting around like 8 mil is pretty safe around Kanto anyway. Mm-hmm. We do have a few clients down south right now. It's a little bit cheaper, but it varies wildly too. But basically, that's 3.6 plus 5 plus 8, right? So call it 16.6 million yen, around 17.
When you say from management, what do you mean? Like utilities, landscaping, house maintenance, that kind of thing?
Yeah, renovation.
What you tell them to set up a company for?
Renovations. Well, a lot of them want to Airbnb it out as well. So they need to have...
For that you definitely
need to be a licensed company in order to... Yes. Or a registered company, rather, in order to do that legally, right? We don't support people conducting a legal business.
Yeah.
Well, that you can't really. So that, you know. So no, are you helping people get their license as well?
That's something we would come to you for, probably.
Well, and as I explained, this is not what I do, right? But I have...
Well, we'd better to go to somebody else.
I have my people. I actually have a couple of people, depending on like the area and also depending on if you want something that is... where you'll get the file and it'll be all nice and made into a beautiful file and it'll be labeled, or if you want, if you just want it done cheaply. So I've actually got a couple of different options. If you want everything really pretty, then I've got one option, and then
pay up.
And are those Shihoshoshis you're working with on this, Tracy?
One is, and one is just a general fix it person,
golfer,
jack of all trades. Yeah, and who's unafraid. I think that the difference is the Shihoshoshis, they're very conservative. They'll follow the rules. They'll follow it to the letter. And then there are other people who are the jack of all trades.
Just make it happen. Yeah.
Make it, and they fixes, and they'll make it work. And they'll know what the regulations are, and they'll fit the square peg in the round hole and get it done. So
how much do they charge for the application? Assuming it's like there's no deep work involved.
It's under 500,000 yen, so it's under 50 man. That's everything done.
Yeah.
So you know, $5,000, or actually, you know, it's actually less than that. It'll probably come in at around, you know, 300,000 yen. But you know, I always just say 500,000 just in case. But that's not including any of the any renos that need doing, like the safety certificate. But then the other person who makes it happen, she's a lot cheaper. So.
But I mean, even at 500K, wow, for peace of mind and getting it done.
Yes.
No worries. You're in the clear. Sit back, have your pina colada or Budweiser or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And they'll tell you exactly what forms you need to get. They'll sign that power of attorney thing for you. They'll even go to the ward office and get those documents for you. So
There's a guy, I forgot his name. A local lawyer from Tokyo or Shihoshoshi, I think he's a lawyer, and he advertises 10,000 yen for his services to apply, which is another 10,000 yen, of course, approximately. And then I don't know, with expenses and what, that comes up to about what you just said,
$300,000 And for someone who fills in forms every day, it's a good business for them too, because you know they know those forms. For me, I'd have to sort of sit there and figure them out. So for someone who just sees these forms on a daily basis, it's a doddle. But for me, it would just It's like getting all the forms home from the PTA. Oh my God. So you don't have kids, Matt, and Ziv has a Japanese partner. So I'm guessing you don't deal with the school.
I do on occasion, just to prove to Chikako that I can do it too, but generally speaking, no.
Neither of us are native Japanese speakers in the house. It's awful. It's just awful. I did hire my native Japanese son though just recently to do all my to manage all of my receipts for all of my houses. So
son, did you say?
Yeah. I got him to do all of my.
Oh, native Japanese language wise, you mean? I'm like, hang on. I thought he was you and Ashley's son. Okay.
Yeah, no, he is. But he's
native Japanese speaker son.
He's a native Japanese speaking son. And so, because I hate any sort of bookkeeping, any sort of admin. That's not me. I'm big picture person. And so all the receipts for all, we buy a lot of stuff for multiple houses, right? So, every time you go and buy a roll of toilet paper, you've got to keep the receipt, but just putting those, documenting those just does my head in. I take a photo of it. I send it to my bookkeeper. She adds it to she adds it to the thing, but then it needs to be filed. So, my son, who reads Japanese natively, he can really easily get it into date format. So I paid him. It was great.
Hey, I need to jump.
Yeah, we have to jump.
Sorry for just joining at the end. It was nice to finally get together. Let's try for next week.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you, and I'll send you the recording of this. So
yes, please.
Okay.
Right. See you guys.
All right.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
There you go. That was a fun conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And again, quick reminder, Anton Warman, the IKEA DIY and short-term stay guy, is going to be joining us and giving us a talk at our Japan Real Estate Summit on 22nd October in Shibuya, Tokyo, as well as join the Q&A panel, of course. So if you still haven't secured your seats or streaming tickets, both of which are limited, highly recommended to grab them now as they definitely might run out soon. Only 9 days left for registration. And same as last year, we will not be able to sell tickets on the day of the event, on the door or online. So run over to realestate.jp, make sure that you can attend on the day, pick our brains, participate in the live Q&A session, but most importantly, meet like-minded folks like yourselves with an interest, passion, and or experience in Japan's real estate property market, as all of our listeners here on the podcast tend to be. This is the best place to meet these folks, hands down. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.